You ready?
This is the Mike Salk Show, serviced by Jaffco Plumbing and Sewer.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
Are you ready?
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Are you ready for a good day?
Yep, appreciate you guys being with us. Mike Salk Show, 710 ESPN Seattle. Hope you're having a good morning. Thursday, almost done with this week here. This has been one of those weeks where I felt like it's the next day each day. Like yesterday, I thought it was Thursday all day. It's not. Moore is going to take us through
spoiler alert, it's not.
It's not. It wasn't. Today's Thursday, not yesterday. That's how it goes. Moore is going to take us through a little, hopefully, educational journey through some of the teams left in the playoffs here. Before we talk to Shannon at 8:30, and before we talk to the professor, and then Dean Blandino, who will join us.
Awesome.
An hour from now, 9 o'clock. Kind of looking forward to that. All right, so Moore, what do we have here exactly?
All right, so I have, there's a few categories that were already led. A team that's in the playoffs led the league.
Okay.
There's a couple where they were maybe in the top five, but they weren't the leader. So okay. we'll have you guess of the teams that are in the playoffs.
Okay.
Which one was in the lead?
Okay.
So starting out, there's a team that's in the playoffs currently that led the league in total passing yards. Who would be your guess?
The Bucks.
It's got to be the Bucks because Tom Brady threw over 5,000. But like, obviously, we all know Joe Burrow and Jamar Chase are going to be in this conversation. So
no one said they weren't in the conversation.
Honorable mention them, but I got to believe Bucks. They threw over 5,000 yards.
Okay,
right?
Yeah, we started out with
an easy one.
Yeah.
Okay, good.
So they had 5,229 total passing yards, 429 more than any other team in the regular season.
It's a lot.
Yeah.
It's interesting, too, because when you think about them in the Super Bowl last year, so much of it was what Fournette did for them, right, in the running game. But Brady threw for another 5,000 this year. No biggie.
Yeah.
The Cowboys, Chiefs, and Rams are the other playoff teams that were in the top five.
Okay.
the Chargers were the only team that didn't make the playoffs that were.
Cowboys, Chiefs, Rams, Bucks. I feel like you're missing a team. Oh, no. Guess the Bengals just aren't on there.
last 3 weeks were fun to watch. That's all I'm missing.
All right, we'll move on to total rushing yards. This was led in the regular season by a team that made the playoffs but is not still currently in.
Total rushing yards.
Of teams that are still in the playoffs.
No, this one was, during the regular season, it was a team that's been eliminated from the playoffs.
Okay.
That led it. And then I'll let you know who's still in.
And eliminated from the playoffs. Colts?
They didn't make the playoffs.
Oh, they're right. Well, it has
the
been
team
eliminated.
That made it was eliminated.
It's not.
I was surprised by this one. Yeah,
it's kind of a hard question as I start thinking. It's not Philly. It's not.
Didn't
Dallas.
Make.
It's not Philly. It's not Dallas. It's not Arizona. AFC. It's not Pittsburgh. It's not New England. The Raiders.
It is one of the teams you mentioned. Already.
Darn it!
You're
I don't
ready.
Know that. I give up. Who is?
It's actually the Eagles.
The Eagles led the league in rushing?
I know, it's so crazy because they played with a rotating cast of characters at running back all season because of injuries and COVID issues. Miles Sanders can never stay healthy, but yeah.
That is surprising.
And they also started off the season barely running the ball. Like, when I did my fantasy football updates, it was really frustrating, and then once they committed to it, of course Jalen Hurts helps, but the team that's still in the playoffs.
Of the teams that are left in the playoffs, which one had the highest amount of rushing yards this year? I'll say the Titans.
Seems like a safe bet, but Henry was out for so long. I'm going to go Bills, the teams that are left.
Salk is right. Even without Derrick Henry, the Titans had 2,404 rushing yards.
Wow.
Okay.
Jeez.
I was curious if that would actually be this is one of those ones I was wondering if it would surprise us. Like, nope, actually, they're eighth on this list, and all the other teams have rushed for more yards than them. Okay. What's next?
All right, we'll move on to passing yards per game. Oh, wait. We already did passing yards. We'll skip that. Sorry. Okay. I had the breakdown. Who had the most sacks this year?
Which team?
Yes. Which team that's still in the playoffs?
Still in the playoffs.
Because there's a team that's already out that led it, but we'll go with the team that's still in that wasn't too far behind them.
The Rams. No, the Rams only had 50. I just happened to do that research yesterday. The
Niners?
That came up to my mind, sure.
I'm going with Niners. Final answer.
I'll go with the Bills.
You were actually right to start. The of the teams that are still in, the Rams had 50.
Yeah.
The Niners had 48.
Oh.
It was actually the Steelers that led the league with 55, and Minnesota was right behind them with 51.
Yeah, I was doing this research yesterday for something separate. So the Seahawks had like 33 sacks or something like that this year, give or take. 33, 35, something like that. And the Rams had, or maybe it was 37. The Rams had 50. So obviously the Rams had a significant number more. But their hurry percentage was almost exactly the same. So I don't know whether you include a sack in a hurry or if they're separate. So I guess if you don't include sacks and hurries, then I guess it would make sense that the Rams are just better. But otherwise, it kind of feels weird. Like, you're getting to the quarterback at roughly
almost the same rate, yeah,
but the Rams are closing it more often than you are. Just kind of a...
They're finishing the play.
Yeah, they're finishing.
Weird. Okay.
Who gave up the most sacks this season of the playoff teams?
Oh, Bengals. That's got to be the Bengals.
I mean, I'll take Justin's word for it. I haven't watched
Joe Burrow.
That is, the man knows his team.
Yeah. Yeah.
The Bengals gave up as many sacks as the leading team in the league had, 55. So the Steelers led the league with 55. The Bengals gave up 55.
Jeez. Not good.
Why do they give up so many sacks?
Surprisingly, there are two other teams in the top five for giving up the most sacks that made, well, actually, three that made the playoffs. The Titans, the Cardinals, and the Steelers.
So for
I'm sorry, the Raiders too. So all playoff teams.
Wait, no, I thought we couldn't sack Big Ben.
Can't sack him.
So yeah, the Titans, Raiders, Cardinals, and Steelers are the only teams behind the Bengals. So it was basically all playoff.
It is funny for all of Russ's complaining and all of that. Like,
he wasn't in the top five.
Yeah, well, but also
Bears. Bears were in
but
there.
But being
other than
in
that,
the top five isn't necessarily a killer for a team. Now, some of that is how many times you threw the ball, this and that. But that is, It's
interesting.
It's certainly telling that you can certainly make the playoffs even if you're top five and sacks
against. I'm sorry, the Bears were in there, but the top six had five playoff teams.
Wow.
Amazing.
All right. Well, that was easy. Bengals get crushed.
All right, give us one more.
All right, let's see. We will go with the team that gave up the fewest points in the regular season.
That is still a playoff team?
It is.
Okay. Gave up the fewest points. Definitely not the Bengals.
I'll go with the Bills.
Yeah. I'm going to go with the Bucks.
It is the Bills.
Woo-hoo!
17 points a game.
I am a golden god.
Justin, Tampa was not far behind. They gave up 20.4 points a game. The second place team, though, was Denver with 18.9, then New England, then New Orleans, then Tampa.
Interesting. So it always kind of blows me away how sometimes the being at the top of these lists can matter, and then sometimes they don't matter at all. Stats are more deceiving in the NFL than in any other sport.
Well, it makes you wonder what New Orleans could have done with a quarterback.
For sure, right? With the defense that they had. That was pretty. And same with Denver. What do those two teams look like if they have a quarterback? You got to have a defense, and certainly you got to have, if you have something that dominates at that level, it's so valuable. But you can throw it all away. It's not worth the paper it's printed on if you don't have a quarterback.
Or the Niners would look like with a better quarterback.
I would just put the Niners in the category of not having a quarterback. All right, good. That was good. That was fun. Thank you, Maura.
Of course.
I wanted to take a couple minutes here. First of all, it is instructive, I think, to kind of go through those exercises to find out what's important and what isn't and where the NFL can confuse you. I don't know whether you would say the Cardinals have a quarterback or not right now based on what we saw in the playoffs. I mean, the Kyler Murray thing was such a disaster, but it led me to go down a little rabbit hole yesterday. And I'm sorry, I probably could have played this earlier in the week, but it cracked me up. Our friend Gambo, John Gambadoro, hosts the afternoon show on our sister station, which is 97.3 Arizona Sports Station. And or 98.7 Arizona Sports Station. And I couldn't stop laughing at how mad he was the next day. So remember, this was a Monday night game, right?
Mm-hmm.
They played Monday night. That game was over Arizona time at what? Started at probably 6 their time, probably over at 9:30 their time. This is him at either 2 or 3 o'clock the next afternoon because he hosts the afternoon show on the station. And he's so mad still. He's like, he's fuming.
You start the game 3 and out, then go 3 and out, then go 3 and out, then go 3 and out. And the good news is That was better than what happened on your next two possessions. Like, the 4-3 and outs were a blessing. The next two possessions were worse. How do you get worse than 4-3 and outs? Like, honestly, how could you get worse than four consecutive 3 and outs? They found a way to do it. Congratulations to the Arizona Cardinals for that crap show that they gave us yesterday.
Oh, my goodness.
He's so mad. I mean, obviously, there's an easy answer to that. What's worse than 3 and out? A pick 6, obviously, or a fumble for 6. And they managed to do they did that once and had another god-awful interception thrown in there as well. So, yeah, things are not necessarily rosy in the desert right now. Here's a little bit more from Gambo.
We should be at a dumpster fire right now doing the show. My God, that was awful. Disgusting. I got to talk about this for the next 4. Do we get hazard pay? Hatch! I want double my salary for this today.
He's yelling it for his boss. His boss is a guy named Ryan Hatch who used to work here. He was our boss for a while, a long time ago. He's a great guy, and he's just sitting there going, Hatch! He's demanding. That'd be like us yelling for Kyle Brown and demanding that he pay us double for coming into work that day. They got some serious issues down there, man. I am very curious to see what they do. If I were a Bidwell, and I'm not, thank God, but if I were a Bidwell and I owned the Arizona Cardinals, I would fire Cliff Kingsbury today. I'd have fired him yesterday. And the reason is not just because I think Kingsbury's a bad coach, although I think Cliff Kingsbury's not a very good coach. You have a much bigger decision to make on Kyler Murray that you've got to make, what, after next year? You've got to decide whether or not you want to pony up, what, $40, $45 million a year?
That's where it's going.
For a guy who hasn't won a playoff game and whose team has collapsed down the stretch the last 2 years. I think that has a lot to do with their coach, Cliff Kingsbury. Because the last couple of years, they've, you know, not just the last few years in Arizona, that's his track record from Texas Tech also. He's been a guy who collapses. And by the way, when he was at Texas Tech, he did have a quarterback. Maybe you've heard of him, Patrick Mahomes. So, like, he's had some pretty – he's got a really great player potentially in Kyler Murray and all kinds of weaponry in Arizona. He had Patrick Mahomes in college. And when you look at what he does at the end of the year, his teams just completely collapse. So if I were them, I would fire him because I want to see what happens if I can put Kyler Murray with a different coach before I have to make decision on what I want to do with the guy for the rest of his tenure. I don't think Cliff Kingsbury is a great coach. I don't know that he's a terrible coach. I don't know that he can't do it. But if I'm them, I've got to find out what Kyler Murray looks like with somebody better. So I'm probably out there in the market right now. I'm trying to figure out whether or not – I know there's a lot of other openings, right? So you may not have, you know, your pick of the litter. But if you're a head coach, let's say that job came available and you're Dan Quinn, who's probably the hottest name on the market right now, right? What's the best job? Is it not the one with Kyler Murray? I would think it is, right? What's the best job? I know Denver is a good job because of great sports fans and a great fan base and all of that. And they've got a really good defense, but they don't have a quarterback. So you're in the market and trying to find that one.
Yeah, I'm just thinking a quarterback. So Fields and Tua?
Right? No thanks. I mean, maybe those guys work out, but I didn't see anything that tells me they're going to be Super Bowl contenders. Right? You want to go to the Giants job? They don't have anything. Right? I mean, you kind of look around the Bears. Yeah, you just mentioned Justin Fields. Again, good fan base, horrible ownership. Right, the Raiders, you get Carr, but I'm not convinced that he's a Super Bowl winning quarterback. Obviously, he took a team to the playoffs, but he's not a star. So, like, you start looking at the jobs that are available. Arizona might be able to point to, hey, look, come here. At the very least, we've got a legitimate quarterback who might be a franchise, you know, kind of player. Come prove it with me. So, if I were them, I would absolutely fire Cliff Kingsbury. It's not personal. I don't know that he's the worst coach out there, but I think they need to make that kind of move.
I love this text on the 425. How relieved is Justin that Arizona has taken the team position of playoff choke artist?
Yes.
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 Let's go.
Well, you know, there's still another week or two to go. Let's see what happens with the Bengals moving forward. Right now, let's tell you what you need to know.
Need to know.
15 minutes past every hour with Mike Salk.
Here's what you need to know. Up first.
Yeah, here's what I like so far about what the Seahawks have done in their defensive coordinator search. It keeps getting bigger, keeps expanding. They keep adding more names to that list. Yesterday, that included Cowboys secondary coach Joe Witt Jr. He's got a little experience under Dan Quinn, crossed paths with John Schneider in Green Bay as well. 43 years old. He's been all over the league in recent years. You can add his name to some of the candidates we've already heard about. Ed Donatell, Clint Hurt, Sean Desai, plus some other names that just make sense, like Marquand Manuel and Gus Bradley. Asked Matt Hasselbeck about specifically Donatell yesterday, and I think his answer is great.
He's a really, really well-respected coach. And you're going to get a lot of those types of names, I'm sure. This is a coveted job to be with Pete and to have that crowd noise behind you. So, who knows if he's really in the mix there or not? I don't know, but I've got a ton of respect for him as a coach.
Yeah, and then you start adding the fact that there did seem to be some momentum in his direction. Okay, maybe that's where they go, but I like the fact that they're adding more names to this list. I like that they're really trying to find the absolute best candidate, not the one who's the most familiar, who they know the best. There's so much to find out and so many potential people out there. I think it's much more in line with the mantra of competing every day to look everywhere you can. First question that I think they should ask is, what are you going to do with Jamal Adams? Is he an advantage or is he a hindrance to your defense? I am amazed at how down on him Brock and Matt and others just seem to be. It makes me wonder how an all-pro safety just a couple of years ago could become so bad so quickly. And I don't just believe it, quite frankly, especially because he's not gotten old. He's not slowed down. He's not shut it down. If he's as bad as they make him out to be, it's like the worst move ever made, right? I mean, especially considering that Quandre Diggs and Ryan Neal have played pretty well together without him back there. It's the number 10 pick all of a sudden, and then the money they threw at it after the trade. But I just believe that one of these defensive coordinators can get this guy back on track. And if they're able to do that, if they're able to unlock all the potential inside Jamal Adams, it should make a monster difference. I don't know that much more would make a bigger difference than what you could do with Jamal Adams.
Here's the second thing you need to know.
Well, I think we knew the Mariners would be well represented once again when the Baseball America Top 100 prospect list came out, and that came out yesterday. It was certainly the case. They finished with five players on the list, two in the top 12, one in the top two. No big surprise, it was Julio Rodriguez, the number two prospect in the game, just a tick behind a catcher from the Orioles. It sounds like he was actually in the running for number one as well. This kid from Baltimore must be pretty, pretty good, because the excitement around Julio Rodriguez has just been palpable. Risen through the ranks in the past few years, he now sits perched right near the top. I'm guessing his performance at the Olympics was a factor.
The top prospects in Major League Baseball, Julio Rodriguez into standing here to try and drive the run in. And boy, is that one hit! Long, long gone! Julio Rodriguez, a no-doubter! Two-run homer for the Dominican Republic. Julio Rodriguez absolutely crushed it.
Yeah, it's funny. We talk about ambushing a fastball. It felt like Julio ambushed the play-by-play guy there. He's like casually kind of rolling along, talking about how he's, oh my God, he hit that ball hard. We may get a chance to see Julio at the big league level this year. In fact, I believe we will. Pitcher George Kirby ranked 12th on the list. Top pitcher in the farm system, ace-type stuff. And don't sleep on young infielder Noavi Marte. He checks in at number 18. Yeah, that's three of the top 20 in your Mariner system. Also, Matt Brash, 45th. Brandon Williamson, 83rd. Puts three pitchers from last year's AA rotation on the list. Emerson Hancock, who was on it last year, fell off. And then Harry Ford, young catcher, presumably not too far out of the top 100 either. Remember, wasn't that long ago this system was producing zero top 100 talents, zero in a year. They now have five, plus recent grads Jared Kelnick and Logan Gilbert already at the big league level and having success. That's how you turn around a franchise. Now go spend some money, bring in the top talent, compliment these young guys, and we'll talk to Shannon Dreyer more about this coming up in 10 minutes.
Here's the third thing you need to know.
I think we've known for a while now that NHL players would not be going to the Winter Olympics. Well, now we also know what they're going to be doing during that time, playing makeup games from all the postponements over the holidays. Kraken had a bunch of their games rescheduled. Most of them will be during what was supposed to be a February break. So if you're a ticket holder, please check your schedule so you know when those games are. In the meantime, the team 1-0 since getting a team dog. I don't know if that's correlation or causation, but either way, Davy Jones, their four-month-old Husky mix, has been good luck so far. He'll hopefully be on hand as they get back in action tonight, trying to win two in a row, hosting San Jose Sharks, currently sitting in the middle of the Pacific Division pack. NBA highlights from last night. I think you got to start with Joel Embiid. He dropped a 50 spot and did it in just 27 minutes as the Sixers crushed the Magic. Really good night for Kyrie Irving. He puts up 30 in a win for Brooklyn over Washington. Heat over the Blazers. Just another 30-point night for DeMar DeRozan as the Bulls top the Cavs. And Milwaukee beats Memphis. Pacers embarrass the Lakers in L.A. That is everything you need to know. We do that quarter past every hour. Right here in the Mike Salk Show.
I got a text from the 253. Open your eyes. Jamal was the worst move ever made. How many professionals have to tell you? He looked good playing for Dr. Blitz, but guess what? Dr. Blitz system is trash.
Maybe.
That's Greg Williams, right? Is that
that's Greg
about?
Williams. Okay. Yeah, he played for Greg Williams there, and that's where he had most of his success. Well, you've got to find a way to use him, right? Or else, yeah, it is the worst move ever. Right? I mean, like, if you can't figure out a way, I mean, I guess maybe not ever. I mean, you got to, like, factor in some of the, like, Ricky Williams deal or Herschel Walker deal. I mean, there's obviously been some worse ones, but
not for this amount.
If you get, well, yeah, I mean, those were definitely for that amount.
Oh, but at the time, yeah.
If you were to say two number one picks, including number 10, and all of the money that you gave Jamal Adams, like you've got to find a way to make him not just useful, but a solution, right? But an advantage for you. Otherwise, what a disaster. So, yeah, I mean, if I'm Pete Carroll and John Schneider and I'm interviewing candidates, that's a huge question for them. How would you use this guy? And hopefully whoever they bring in says, I can't wait to use Jamal in this role. I've got it perfectly set up for him, and this is how I would use him, and I see him as a great bridge to the future. Yeah, text message 253, what's Jamal's trade value? Zero. His trade value right now is zero. You could get nothing with his contract. In the production from the last 2 years, the answer to that is zero. He could get zero.
Woof.
So what? I mean, that's also sort of just the way football works, where trade value is sort of a strange animal. But you'd get zero for him. You're not going to get a third rounder. You're not going to get anything. You can't cut him because you owe him too much money, like actual guaranteed money. You need to find a way to unlock the potential of Jamal Adams, and I'm not going to stop believing in him. He was a Pro Bowler. He was an All-Pro 2 years ago. You can't tell me that that's a guy who's not worth anything.
Or that isn't good.
You can't tell me there's no way the right defensive coordinator couldn't figure out how to use him in the best. The dude still had double-digit sacks a year ago. Don't tell me that that's a waste. You got to find a way to use them. All right, coming up next, let's switch back, talk a little bit of baseball before we talk to the professor. I can ask him about Jamal Adams' trade value if you really want. He's going to say zero, trust me. But let's talk to Shannon. You got five different Mariners in your top 100 list for Baseball America. Which ones will contribute immediately? We'll ask her that question and more next.
You're listening to the Mike Salk Show,
powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio
on 710 ESPN Seattle.
That's the triumphant music of Jerry DePoto walking into a room just having checked out the new Baseball America rankings. Like, yeah, that's right. I got number two.
Song is called Win.
I got number 12.
He's doing this.
I got number 18. What's up?
The slow Conor McGregor strut. The arms out, lean back.
As he should. Look what I did. I got another five in the top 100. I got three in the top 20. What's going on? Let's talk to Shannon Dreher here on the Emerald Queen Casino Sportsbook Hotline. She is, of course, our Mariners insider reader at 710sports.com. And you can hear on the Hot Stove Show, which is returned now on Tuesday nights. Hi, Shannon. How are you?
Mike, are you not going to acknowledge that Howdy is on that show, too?
Who? Who now? Who's that? What? Who'd you say? What's his name?
The glue of the hot stove. Howdy, I believe it is.
You put glue in a hot stove? That seems like a way to get yourself high or something. Don't put glue on a hot stove. And don't leave Howdy there either. You're going to end up having to scrape him off or something. Yes, she is hosting with the great boy Howdy. So does he go by Howdy on the hot stove show, or does he use his real name?
I'm using his real name. I'm thinking that perhaps we should be more formal with that, so I'm just kind of waiting permission to go with Howdy.
I would wait for permission to use his real name. Like, for everybody else, he's just Howdy. I would just go with that. So I would assume that this upcoming week you'll be talking about the Baseball America list. This came out yesterday. They have really been high on Julio Rodriguez and George Kirby. I was, I don't know, I was hoping maybe Julio would be number one overall, but number two is no slouch.
No, and it sounds like there was a lot of debate and discussion about that, and it easily could have been Julio Rodriguez at that point. So I don't, you know, think that's too much of a slight. But, you know, it's exciting. We're getting to the point right now. You know, the evaluators have liked quite a bit. Last year in spring training was eye-opening. You know what the skill set was. You know what the talent was. He was still very young. But what really jumped out at me when we saw him on backfields, when we saw him in games, when we saw him just about everywhere, was his ability to make adjustments. And, you know, it's tough because spring training pitching is spring training pitching. But you didn't see him make the same mistake twice. You didn't see him get pulled. You didn't see him miss a lot. And it was just very interesting to see that he wasn't just going up there, I'm the young guy and I've got to try and hit home runs and hack, hack, hack. He had an approach, and it was very impressive to see a year ago. So I think that he's got a chance to make things very interesting once we get to Peoria.
Well, and not only that, he's got the personality and all of that that kind of goes with it. He's got the smile. Like, you combine that talent with that charisma and that smile, and you've got the kind of guy that, you know, baseball could turn into a really big star nationally, don't you think?
I do. And, you know, he's one of those people when you talk to people in the organization about him, you know, there's just glowing reviews about him, the person. There are stories about if you're having a bad day, just go spend some time around Julio. He's not going to let you be down. And then I remember at the end of the season, this was one of my favorite moments, but they brought the minor league award winners in and they all had their suits on, and Julio is there and he's wearing his Olympic medal, which was just a sight to see, you know, how proud he was of that. And I interviewed him for about 10 minutes in the dugout. He greeted me like he knew me forever. We've talked a few times, but we hadn't seen each other since spring training. Just, you know, couldn't be warmer, couldn't be friendlier, couldn't have a bigger smile. And that's when I kind of started to wonder, because of his athleticism, could we see him in center field? Is he perhaps the answer in center field? So I asked him after the interview, I'm like, hey, I see they've got you in center a little bit more. And before I could say anything, he got the biggest smile and he looked at me. And, you know, bear in mind, this is a 21-year-old kid who hasn't played above double A yet. And he said, believe me, looking in his eye, and he had this big straight in the eye, I am telling you first, making an emphasis that this was for me. And he had got a big smile on his face and he said, it's going to be wonderful. I had to keep myself from laughing because the confidence and just, you know, it's that is Julio.
Well, when you put that together, though, Shannon, when you talk about that kind of talent, top two prospect in the game, maybe almost number one, that kind of a personality, the smile, all of it, you never want to make a comparison to someone like Junior because he's just in his own category of superstar. But those are the types of qualities that made him Junior, no?
Well, yes, but I think Julio's even more outgoing. There was always a little element of guardedness, you know, from what I understand. I didn't know Junior when he was 19, 20 when he first came up, but I heard that that was there a little bit as well. And, yeah, but definitely, you know, you're going to see that smile out on the field, but there's also, you know, he is very serious about his baseball. So I think it is all going to play just wonderfully, and you hope that, you know, they will be very careful when they bring him up, how they bring him up. And those around him will be too, but you just want to make sure that he keeps that element of it. It's something that, you know, you love to see in this game. You don't see it. So many guys are closed. They don't show the joy. He does show that joy, yeah. And it's just very magnetic.
A year ago, Shannon, George Kirby and Emerson Hancock were sort of viewed, I think, in the same category of prospect. They were both very good pitching prospects. A year later, George Kirby is number 12 on this list and being talked about as a legitimate ace pitcher as he gets to the major leagues, and Emerson Hancock's fallen off the list entirely. These two guys just seem like they're going in different directions. You could focus on, I guess, either one or both, but what do you make of these two that I had always kind of lumped together?
Well, it was a little bit of a surprise because what you hear internally is not that they are going completely in different directions right now. I've heard that there is a lot of excitement about Emerson Hancock. I did ask. He is healthy. You know, there was some concern, you know, on my part when you saw that he was shut down twice last year, that his season was shortened. And but to hear that he did participate fully in high-performance camp this fall, is in the pitching camp right now that'll lead right into spring training down in Arizona. So I feel better about that. The Kirby news is fantastic. When I first saw him, yes, he had some stuff, and the stuff has improved. He is definitely a strike thrower, but not always good strikes. There were strikes that could get hit, and I think that is something that they've worked on him in that, you need to put this pitch here against a major leaguer. And then I think the big difference is time. Kirby's had a little bit more time in the system. When you look at where Hancock came in, he came in right before the pandemic. So he has not had a normal in any sense of the way bringing up so far in his time in professional ball. He pitched, I think it was 42 innings this year. So to drop him off that much of a cliff, to me, I find a little bit puzzling. I understand if there is concern about what could be going on injury-wise, why he missed time last year. But to all of a sudden say that the play that the evaluator or the plays and the pitches that the evaluators were so high on when he was drafted doesn't look right, that perhaps he's a reliever, I think it's a little hasty to be making that call after just 42 minor league games.
All right, Shannon, we got about a minute here. It is currently, January 20th. Let's fast forward. It is February 5th, okay? The league and the players somehow get together and they reach a deal and free agency and everything else, the season, everything opens back up in a 10-day sprint before everyone reports to spring training. What is the first thing you're doing if you're Jerry DePoto?
Well, you're checking in and with deals that perhaps were close right before everything shut down. And we know that he was pushing for something at the end. I don't think it's going to be a matter of you just pick up, sign, and done. The landscape will be changed. I think teams will be jumping in on free agents. So I don't think you see something right away, but I think he checks in on those deals. You know that he's looking for another infielder. And I think you're going to have to move quick. Was there a 1-2 or was he doing things that were kind of at the same time? Was he trying to get one more infielder in a Trevor Story perhaps? Or was he trying to also add a Matt Chapman or a Chris Bryant? You know he wants another starting pitcher. And so you are on the phone from minute one.
Good. Good. I can't wait. That's going to be fun. Let's hope that little prediction comes true there. And like in another couple weeks, they work this thing out and we can get to spring training reasonably on time. Shannon, good to talk to you. Always great to hear your voice. We'll talk soon.
All right, Mike.
All right, there you go. And you can read Shannon's latest on the Baseball America rankings there at 710sports.com. All right, coming up next, the Seahawks have a new defensive coordinator candidate emerge yesterday. We'll ask John Clayton who he is and whether or not he's got a shot. That and a whole lot more next. Mike Salk Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
John Clayton's Morning Drive, every morning at 8:45 on the Mike Salk Show.
I thought you saw a lot of good things out of offense. I think that was a very positive sign.
The first and final word on everything NFL from the professor John Clayton.
It just amazes me. I give it credence, but not total credence.
It's John Clayton's Morning Drive with Mike Salk.
Good morning, John. Hello, John. Good morning.
Good morning.
There we go. Hey, yeah. Good morning. There we go. We got you. We got a new name yesterday emerging for the Seahawks defense coordinator job, Joe Witt Jr. Who is he?
I don't know him that well. I mean, because again, he's kind of a new name on the books. But again, he did such a great job with the Cowboys secondary for interceptions and guys in secondary. So, don't know his history too much or don't know much about that. But, he worked well with Dan Quinn. And he worked well with the guys in the secondary for interceptions and plays and all those different things. So now they're up to six.
What does it tell you that they are interviewing that many people?
What it tells me is that they got like almost two or three different combinations of what they want to do. I mean, the one combination, and again, so much of it deals with the fact that you get experience coming from the Chicago Bears. But like Ed Donatell has worked so long off and on with Pete Carroll, because in 1983, he was on the University of Pacific staff mm-hmm. with him. And then, of course, he was on the Jets staff with him as a defensive backs coach when Pete was head coach with the Jets. So, he's been a coordinator four different times. So he fits in well. Then, for example, the other scenario is that if they go ahead and, try to promote Clint Hurt, that's why they got with Sean Desai from the Chicago Bears, because they work together in Chicago. And so, like, you can have a guy that's worked with certainly Clint Hurt. Mm-hmm. That's a possibility. Still waiting to see if they can get Gus Bradley in the mix. We should know in the next couple days, because I think that the Raiders are going to end up hiring Jim Harbaugh. And if they hire Jim Harbaugh, then Harbaugh is probably going to bring over Vic Fangio as defensive coordinator, and Bradley's going to be available. So I think they're working a couple different, like three or four different scenarios.
What would you make of bringing Gus back? That's sort of my preference. What would you make of bringing back Gus Bradley?
I think it'd be good. He's been here before. He knows the system. He's a good coach. And so I like that one, and I like the Ed Donatell one, and I certainly am not opposed to the Clint Hurt one.
Yeah.
So I think they got a pretty good list together.
Yeah, and the Sean Desai is super intriguing, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't know as much about Joe Witt, but Desai just seems to have like a, I don't know, just a, such a different background, and maybe that doesn't work, but it sure seems like he's been able to make it work so far. So I'm always intrigued by people in the NFL who come from just a different spot. And in his case, it's being a professor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, I mean, smart guy, obviously, and a guy that can come in here, educate the players and all that stuff. Now, the question is going to be, if they promote Clint Hurt and bring in Sean Desai, is Desai going to be willing to work underneath Clint Hurt? Which, of course, right now, I mean, Desai doesn't have a job.
Right. Well, even maybe of more concern, John, is that his nickname, do you know what his nickname is?
No.
The Professor.
Yeah. There you go. You like that.
Well, do you? Is there room in Seattle for two The Professors?
I don't see why not.
Oh, so you're willing to share.
I'm sharing.
That's incredibly generous of you. I wasn't sure whether you'd be. That's very magnanimous.
Yeah,
I like that about you.
Yeah.
Derrick Henry going to play this week?
I think so. Not, you know, he's not going to play the full game, but I think he'll be in the rotation. We'll see how he can do, but at least he's on the practice field. They're saying he's going to be able to play. And so, you know, with his return and maybe more playing time and better playing time for Julio Jones, that makes the Titans that more appealing.
Yeah, how about Jimmy Garoppolo?
I question it. I really question
it.
Really? Well, I mean, he's got, first off, he has a bad thumb, right? And the thumb injury hurts him every time he throws the football. The shoulder injury is actually worse than the thumb, and he's going to be playing in a zero wind chill in Green Bay. How's that going to be for the thumb?
Probably not great, but everything we've seen from Trey Lance is that he just hasn't looked ready for primetime. Throwing him into that mix feels like if there's anything you can get out of Jimmy. I also wonder whether this is sort of like a Big Ben type of thing, like kind of setting up the excuse beforehand.
I don't know. I mean, he's hurt. I mean, simple as that. It's like it's not any excuse or anything. Ben wasn't hurt. So it's like I don't see this being set up as a, you know, any predetermined thing of that nature. So it's just a matter, you know, can he play and can he play well? And I really question it right now because, you know, again, the shoulder injury, that's not good. The thumb injury, that's not good. And you are playing in Green Bay, and Green Bay's well rested and everything else.
Mm. You mentioned the possibility of Harbaugh in Vegas. You think that's going to happen?
I think so now. I thought it died down a week ago when he hired a defensive line coach for Michigan. But then what you're looking at is that 2 days ago, you know, one of the candidates for the job in Chicago, because they have 14, you're interviewing 14 general managers, which is absolutely ridiculous. And so one of the candidates pulled his name out, but he's the guy that worked with Harbaugh back when Harbaugh was the quarterback coach for the Raiders many, many years ago. So it's like I could easily see that happening. I mean, you know, they had the interview yesterday with the Rich Bisaccio, and so it's like now it's a matter, you know, can they work out a deal? And you know, Mark Davis, you know, he paid over $10 million a year, and $100 million contract for, you know, getting John Madden on, or John Gruden on. So I can't imagine why he wouldn't do anything with Harbaugh.
Yeah, and you think Harbaugh would like that job in Vegas with that franchise? So that's a good fit for him.
Yes. I mean, he's been with the Raiders before, and you know, I don't know where he stands with Derek Carr and all that stuff. I think he wants a new challenge, you know, because he had to take a pay cut to stay with Michigan. That obviously is not a real fun thing to do. So it's like, no, I could easily see that happening now.
What any news out of Arizona? Any further thoughts on what happens with Kingsbury there?
Looks like he's going to be able to stay because, again, we're now Thursday. Nothing happened so far. And you figure if something's going to happen, it was going to happen Wednesday, maybe Thursday today. But I think right now he's going to be able to stay.
They're losing their mind down there. Our buddy Gambo down there was screaming. He was yelling at Ryan Hatch. Did you hear this?
No.
He's so upset that he has to work. He's yelling at our old boss, who's now currently his boss. Listen.
We should be at a dumpster fire right now doing the show. My God, that was awful. Disgusting. I gotta talk about this for the next four. Do we get hazard pay? Hatch! I want double my salary for this today.
He's very upset.
That sounds like it. Yeah. I mean, yelling and shouting on the air like that?
I know. Wow. Have you ever heard it? Have you ever heard such craziness? I can't imagine doing such a thing.
Yeah, no. I've heard it.
Hey, what's Mike Mayock going to do?
Probably go back into broadcasting.
I hope so. I thought he was great when he was at NFL Network.
Too.
And
yeah.
I don't know. I guess he obviously, he lost his job, and maybe there are folks out there who think that, it hurts some of the credibility of his ability to talk about draft picks, but I don't think it does. I think now he's experienced the process firsthand.
Right, exactly. I mean, probably more experience. It makes him a little bit better because now he sees the whole thing because, he worked for an organization. Now, again, John Gruden was the one who pretty much picked the players, particularly in the top part of the draft. And, they obviously didn't draft very well until this past year. But I can see Mayock, easily getting back into broadcasting.
Yeah, I saw somebody criticizing him for hiring John Gruden. He didn't do that,
no.
Right? I mean, that was separate. He was under Gruden.
Exactly.
Yeah. That's what I thought.
Again, there's so much bad reporting right now around the country. And that's another example of it.
Yeah. John, great stuff. We're glad we have you every day at 8:45. Thank you so much. We'll talk tomorrow.
Okay, thanks.
All right, there you go. John Clayton, every morning with the professor. And very generous, very magnanimous, willing to let another professor come here. He's not even going to ask for money.
Pretty incredible.
You just let it go? Like, oh, yeah, I'll be the professor and you be the professor. Never would have guessed. All right, coming up next, I've been looking forward to this. Thank you, Maura, for finding me Dean Blandino. I love the whole NFL officiating thing. I don't like to complain that much about officials in games, but I am somewhat fascinated by the role they play and certainly in the rules and the way it affects the way the NFL operates. So we'll talk to Dean Blandino coming up next. Don't miss it. It's the Mike Salk Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.